Welcome back, the Dutch Bros. Brant Boersma here. I am sitting on the red couch with my boy, Marcus Bariota.
Touchdowns. Let's get them this week.
Gosh. Okay, so we're diving deep into the history of Dutch Bros Coffee. We're really in part two of this from our super bitchin' trav talks that we get at our headquarters here in beautiful Southern Oregon.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to this next segment, part two of the history talks. What have we got to look forward to, Mark?
Well, at this point, you know, Trav, part one, had explained a lot about life on the dairy and just what it was, and then that going down and just the idea of even starting Dutch Bros. So part two we're getting into, they're actually open for business at this point. So just first day sales, going into multiple locations.
All the goods.
Yeah, and eventually even getting into Medford.
Growing.
And then also a big part of the credit of the growth of the company was discovering Tony Robbins.
Dun-dun-dun.
That's in there too.
Dun-dun-dun.
So yeah, woo! Give that a listen.
So yeah, so here you go. Enjoy.
The first day that we opened that cart, we did $65 in sales. And honest to God truth, we were ecstatic. It felt like we partied all day. We got to rock some music, BS with customers, drink coffee. We were looking at each other like, dude, that wasn't even like work. And so the next week into the gig, we had done more money than the 65 bucks. I think we did like 70 and 85 and then like a 78. And then we broke 100. And we're like, it's unbelievable, man. This shit's working. And I mean, from that moment, it was like, what is possible? It was hard to comprehend that we went from milking cows on a dairy farm, getting up at 2 a.m, you know, bucking hay, moving irrigation line, dealing with cow shit and flies and all sorts of stuff that I can't even fathom anymore. But it was hard work, and it was 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And here we were peddling coffee. Our 8-ounce cup was our small. Our 12-ounce cup was our large. It was $1.25 and $1.75. And it was simple. We just shaved ice because we were worried that coffee would slow down in the summer and we'd need another product to sell. Little did we know people drank coffee year-round. It was the weirdest thing. So we found out after that first summer season that our coffee sales didn't deteriorate. We just sold a few extra items with shaved ice, and it was a mess, man. I mean, making shaved ice, it was wild. You had these blocks of ice in an ice chest. You'd stick them in the shaved ice machine. You had stick them everywhere. I mean, kids are wanting Rainbow Bright. It was wild. Make our Costco runs to pick up our supplies, and we hit United Grocers, too. We had our generic cups, and we had a simple menu, and Dane had developed the verbiage for the menu. He had descriptors for the Dutch mocha and the Dutch latte and the Dutch cappuccino and all that stuff, and we'd formulated these recipes, and in those early days, we had an easy-up tent. Man, when winter came, it was frigid, but hell, it was way better than the dairy farm because we go out 20-degree days, and you have to go get all the cattle herded up, 2 a.m, get them all in the milking parlor, and I mean, talk about cold. It was cold. So we dress warm, man. Wear beanies. We wore boots. We ended up getting one of the first Mr. Heaters. We set the little Mr. Heater out there, man. You have to light it. It's on a 5-gallon propane tank. This crazy guy named Bert used to come by and beat on Dane's mobile home door at 6 a.m. every morning and be like, wake up, man, we gotta go. We were thankful to have Bert because, hell, we'd probably blow our timeline and not open on time had he not been there. But he was there, and he was nuts. He was one of our first customers, and he just wanted his damn coffee, so he knew he had to wake our asses up to get downtown to get his coffee. And he was driven and motivated to do it because he had to go to work. I'll never forget one morning, Bert is sitting there by the Mr. Heater, and he's trying to get warm, and it's so cold, and he's just like, man, it feels so good. And he turns around, and he's talking to us, and he's got his coffee. And all of a sudden, I look over, and Bert's ass is on fire. And I'm like, Bert, you're on fire. stop, dropped, and rolled. And he got so pissed off, and he jumped in his truck, and he took off and left. And we were laughing, man. Like, oh, my God, dude. We don't know. Maybe Bert won't show up tomorrow. There he was, 6 a.m., man. Wake up, dude. Those memories are some of the most fun memories for me. And I got to tell you, Grocery Outlet was right next door to that first cart. And so, you know, we had their employees, we were trading them, and we had one guy, he was like our best customer, and the guy had the greatest personality on the planet, big old bright smile, good looking young buck, man. He was a couple years older than me at the time, I want to say he was like 23. He's got a job at Grocery Outlet, and we'd ask him to cover for us occasionally while we ran across the street, take a piss, come back, and make sure that everything was cool. And occasionally had him build like a coffee, which was like a nightmare, but he always took great pride into it. His name was Brian Witkop. And so Brian got into a fight with his brother. His brother broke his jaw. I think both of them got DUIs and thrown in jail. And so Brian came in with his jaw wired shut one morning. He's like, man, I got my shit, my tit and ringer. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? He's like, I got in a fight with my brother, and he broke my jaw, and now I have to drink my coffee through a straw. And I'm like, dude, and I'm laughing. He's like, yeah, I went to jail. And he goes, and this is the deal. I've got to, like, serve 30 days in jail. I'm going to lose my job. I'm like, no way. That sucks, man. I mean, did you talk to the boss at Grocery Outlet? He's like, yeah, talk to the boss at Grocery Outlet. And yeah, man, there's no way. He said, I'm done, man. Last day. He goes, there's only one way that I can get out of jail during the day. I got to get a work permit. I got to get a job that they'll give me a work permit. And I'm like, really? So I talked to Dane. I'm like, hey, dude, what do you think, man, if we give Brian a job, he can get out of jail. And, dude, we don't even have to pay him, man. So we did, and Brian was our first employee. And he was stoked because the alternative was sitting in jail. He'd come hang out and party. We had him going to get ice, go run to get milk. If we forgot something, he was just like all over the place, man. And he was electric. And so Brian was our first employee. We had two shops within 6 months. Fred Meyer had called back. We'd opened over at Fred Meyer. Fred Meyer was a drag. I mean, you go in there, man, and you had fluorescent lights beaming down on you. And they'd have the little song, they had their jingle that they play all the time. I know Brooke knows it because she was coming in. She was one of my customers back then. And it was like, you'll find it at Freddy's, like 9,000 times a day. And then they'd station like people that had trinkets and shit to sell next to you. And those guys would have nothing to do, and there's nothing that they'd rather do than bullshit with you. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, I can't hang with this nut. I faked like I was reading the newspaper sometimes, just as a shield, you know? And I talked to the dude, I gave him a lot, man, but then I was like, pretty soon I had no energy left. I was like empty. Like, damn, man, I gotta still serve Brooke a coffee. So Brian would work in that shop on Sundays, and he'd get decked out to the nines. He always had his way with people. Like, he was really cool with people. He'd wear a tie, and he'd know that it was a church day. And so he'd roll in there, man, and he'd present himself like he was just Bible thumping Joe. And he'd be in there, man, and the ladies would come up and they'd see Brian, they'd drop him tips like I'd never seen in my life. All the ladies love Brian. But those times helped to formulate, I think, the principles and the values in the organization. And as we continued to kind of grow into ourselves, we ended up really focusing on how we could make an impact with our community. And Dane had the great wisdom to say, you know, this Fred Meyer thing, I mean, doing like 20, 30 bucks in sales sometimes a day, it was a dog. He's like, man, you know, let's make it through the holiday season. And then this spring, let's take that card out of Fred Meyer. We'll go do special events. And we'll go really try and build the business downtown, because people love downtown, man. I mean, we'd rotate and work downtown every other day. He'd work Fred Meyer. Brian worked occasionally. And I think that that effort that we made, it really took our downtown hub to a whole new level. We were doing like $200, $250 a day. We were like, wow, man, we're making more money than we've ever made. We'd take home $30 cash a day. And Dane somehow lived on that money. He had, it was $900 a month. He had a family of three. For me, man, I was like living. Two roommates, living in a brand new house, kegs of beer. Life was good. We were trading Abby's pizza and beer for lattes and mochas. And it was all on. It was sick. And those guys thought they were getting the better deal from us. Little did I know, they probably weren't paying for all the product like the main headquarters from Abby's were. But I knew we were kicking ass. I mean, a couple pitchers of beer and a giant Abby special, man, went a long way. So we kept thinking about how we could do what we were doing better. What were we doing downtown that was working, and how could we bring that into another location? What would it look like if we took this thing to a third or a fourth? How would we be able to grow? And we were always trying to figure out how we can make what we were doing better. The little things made massive difference. We never wanted to argue with the customers. We knew if we won, they may not be back. So it was always, they win. Every single time, man. Guaranteed to satisfy. We figure out a way to make them feel like no matter what, they were more important than anything else to us. And we talked about anything and everything. Customer service and dialogue back then, it was all about having a conversation. It was developing relationships. And that foundation that we built would grow on to serve us throughout our quest. Dane had the wisdom to sit me down in his mobile home on the living room floor. And we did this goal setting workshop, limitless goals, 1, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 year goals without any limitation. It was just capture your dreams, create an inventory of them, go limitless, write it down. If it's a thought, if you could think it, write it. It didn't even matter, just get it down. And then put those 1, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 year marks next to them. And then we exchanged them and we laughed. I'm like, you're so stoned, dude. You're never gonna do that shit. He did the same with me. I mean, we had some great jovial times over it. It was fun. And he had picked up that book, the Tony Robbins book, Unlimited Power Within. And that thing, man, had he not made that purchase, had he not sat me down on the living room floor of his mobile home, I don't think Dutch Bros would be here today. It's those little choices, right, that you make. You go, man, what would life be like had I not made that choice today? Where would I be had I not met this person and they were in my life? There's no way for any of us to know those things, but those things led to other things. And all the choices along the course of the walk had everything to do with shaping the organization and would have everything to do with where we are now. And I didn't know that then. Hell, I was 21. Think of where you're at when you're 21. What's important? What are you doing? What's the focus? So those limitless goals and then the ultimate success formula. We layered it in. It was know your specific outcome. Take massive action to get it. Ask yourself if the action you're taking is working. And if it's not, change it until it does. And we kept with it. At one point, we had 5 push carts. We were in Walmart in Grants Pass. We were in Walmart in Medford. We were at RCC. We had one at Fred Meyer. Jared Hamilton came into the scene. He was flexing shops, working shifts. We had a guy named Kyle Sage. I know Brooke remembers Kyle. And we were doing the best we could with what we had where we were. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. But we were doing it. And we were learning along the course of the way. And we were using that formula. What's our outcome? Well, when our goals, we said we want locations throughout the 11 Western United States. Hell, we were trying to figure out just how to do 5 push carts. And not a one of them was nearly as good as the one downtown. That downtown location, it was our vibe. It was our environment. It was our place. That little 10 by 10 square, that was our place. But we controlled it. And in Fred Meyer, we were a product of their environment. At Walmart, they wanted us to tell people they couldn't smoke. They had rules and policies on their property that their employees were not allowed to smoke. And back then, man, you could smoke on a fucking airplane. I was like, yeah, man, no problem. We'll tell people to put their cigarettes out, sure. And then here, Jimmy come up. He'd order his Quadzilla vanilla with extra vanilla. And he'd spark a cigarette, and I'd go, there you go, Jimmy. I'm not saying shit to Jimmy. That's the way it was. But we weren't in our own environment. We were using that formula, like, what do we got to do to make this work? How can we change it? What's not working here? And we came down to this place of, you know what? We're going to get the hell out of those places. And we're going to do another location that's our own. And so we opened where the little old lady, Bonnie, the Oakey lady that I described, where Western Espresso was. They had been long gone. And we went up there, we did a deal, got the lease done, and put in our first drive-through. And that was a difference maker, man. It was a huge differentiator. Our customers could then not only walk up and hang out under a permanent tent, it wasn't an easy up, but they could drive through. And they didn't have to get out of their car with their kids, and they didn't have to go out in the elements. And we could give them their coffee fast, and they could be on their way to work quickly. And we realized, yeah, this is the niche. We had a little bit of something for everybody. We kept refining it. We left the one in Fred Meyer. We felt like we needed to leave the one in Fred Meyer. When it really was never profitable, it never did anything extraordinary, but we loved the people and the customers appreciated us having there. So we said, that we're going to use as our advertising. Those people are going to be word of mouth advertisers for us. We'll just leave it there. It's right in the main entryway. It'll be cool. It pays for itself. It doesn't make much money, but it works. And that drive-through, pretty soon, started to do what downtown was doing. And the volume downtown, like $300-$400. And then came this customer one day, and he goes, hey, man, I want to open a drive-through like you got here in Medford. Can you show me everything you do? Can you teach me what you know? And I will give you $500 a month to use your name and your system if you could just show me how to do it. And Dan and I looked at ourselves and we're like, hell yeah. $500 a month, dude. No problem. Marty McKenna Jr. went over to Medford and he started the crusade over there. And it was the first drive-through in Medford. It was on Biddle Road. And man, he started to do what we were doing and doing it even better. And we thought, we got this stuff figured out. And now we've got our foundation to move from. And what once seemed impossible was becoming possible. That first agreement that we did was not a franchise agreement. It was a business license agreement. And so Marty, we furnished him with one of our best employees at the time. This girl that was like beautiful, blonde, charismatic personality, bright smile. I mean, who wouldn't love just this warm, friendly, outgoing personality with a big smile, right? She was magnetic. Her name was Tammy Landaker. And Tammy and Marty, they got that first drive-through in Medford rocking and hitting levels that we didn't even think were possible. I think they were doing like $400, $500 a day. It was crazy. You know, I had one of the records at one time, and I think it was 150 on an afternoon shift. And I'd be like, yeah, beat that. Nobody can beat that shit. I also hold the lowest volume in Dutch Bros history. I think it was $27 at Fred Meyer. And I'm damn sure nobody's going to beat that. It was like 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. It was a drag, man. So that test of taking the business and leaning on someone else and trusting them to be able to do what we did was starting to show that it could be done. It was in this place where the customer service was a priority. There was a sense of urgency to make sure cars got in and out fast. The quality of the products, they were making the way that we taught them how to make them. We taught them how to pull shots. We taught them how to steam milk. We made sure that you used a syrup scoop to measure your flavors, and the pricing was consistent. The recipes were systematic. Everything was built for them to execute. We just didn't have anything to point to. We just showed them how to do it, and they proved that they could do it by demonstrating it back. And we did that repetitiously. And we found with that, that repetition became the mother of skill. We were trying to figure out how we could take our business to a whole new level. The temptation was to go wholesale your coffee. to go sell it to other folks. And a lot of companies were doing that. Boyd's Coffee, you know, sell it to restaurants, customized blends. The way that most coffee roasters, including ours at the time with Paul Layton, they were going out and they were getting these wholesale accounts and customizing their roasts and their blends to serve what the customer wanted. And they'd furnish them the equipment for free. They'd make this large investment, and then those people would buy the coffee from the roaster or the wholesaler. And so we were watching that, and it was kind of trippy because people started to really promote espresso. And if any of you guys were around in the 90s, it started to pop up in C-stores. It'd be like, espresso served here, now, hot. And it was weird, right? And it was popping up everywhere. And there were a lot of people that wanted to do push carts. It was trendy. We were kind of monitoring these things. And I think at that time, Jared maybe had moved to Portland. And he had taken a hiatus. I think he had a beautiful girl that he was chasing, and extraordinary life that was pretty radical to go live. And I would love to rewind the clock and be able to showcase what it was all like back then, but I can try and paint the best picture I can. And, you know, Dane and I and Marty had really kind of continued to get this thing going, and we were having unbelievable success. We opened another one in Medford, and we decided, you know, maybe we should come together as a group and partner. Dane and I were partners, right? And we had this business license agreement with Marty, but, you know, maybe we could be better if we partnered together. And so when we formed this partnership, we went down and got legal counsel and formed an LLC. I didn't even know what the hell it was. But it was a limited liability company, and you know, there was always this big selling point, like, well, that shields your personal assets from your business assets and shit, and you need to do it because it's important for legal reasons and taxes and stuff. And Dane and I would kind of look at each other and go, well, whatever the hell we got to do, let's just do it, and we'll figure it out later. And when we formed this partnership, at the beginning, I think everything was really cool. It's kind of like a new marriage. Sparks are flying, and you know, everything's cool. You know, and then you, like, settle in, and you realize that we're all flawed, and we all have strengths and weaknesses, and we're all different, and, you know, the true versions of ourselves show up over time. You can't hide them. I'm sure for Dane and Marty, dealing with me in my 20s was, like, just ridiculous. Here I was, I'm making 30 bucks a day cash, I've got a brand new house, couple roommates, we're in our 20s, parties are everything. Marty lived right behind me, and he was raising two kids that were like infant and three-year-old. So, you know, I'd have the stereo rocking, we'd have big parties, everybody hanging out. And Marty would call at about, you know, 10 o'clock at night and go, hey, dude, can you turn the music down? I go, yeah, sure, dude. Hang up, and I go turn it up. It was not very cool at all. I had very little compassion for the family environment. I'm like, dude, you can move. I mean, you don't have to live there. Or you could come party with us and bring the kids. Hell, I don't care. So I'm sure that I played a significant role in a lot of the problems that were maybe about to happen. But as we started to grow and we wanted to expand, Marty, with his lifestyle, wanted to take more money. And money with relationships and partnerships, it can become a real challenge. Now, I didn't need a lot, and Dane certainly didn't want to take a lot. He certainly could have. But we had made this commitment together before Marty that we would roll everything back into the business always. We'd live in a minimalistic fashion. And that 30 bucks a day, yeah, we could stretch it to 50, which we did. We stretched it to 50 maybe, and it was like, I don't know, 95, somewhere in there. And we've got a couple other shops in Medford. I think McAndrews in Medford was the second one that we did, and maybe the other one was Riverside. We bought a little piece of property, and we put our little hut up over there, and we contacted a guy out of the courier to start building these huts. He did offices. And Dane and I drove out, and we met with Skip Grant. and he was building these offices in the backyard outside of his house. And we didn't tell him who we were because we didn't want to make him think that, you know, he had a fat fish on his hook. So we were like, could you build one of those buildings like the Dutch Brother guys have? And he's like, oh yeah, I could do that easy. I'm like, no way, really? Like, how much could you do it for? And the guy's like, well, I think I could do it for $12,500. I could build you one of those drive-through buildings that they have, and it would be unbelievable. And I'm like, really? So we went back, huddled, spent some time, beer and pizza, Abby's, talking about our strategy, talking about could we go forward with this guy? Could he actually do what we needed done? What if he didn't? What if he's a fraud? What if all these scenarios? And we had to take the risk. His little offices look really nice. He cared about the detail. He was a craftsman. He worked hard. He was an extremist, Seventh-day Adventist, didn't watch TV, didn't drink alcohol. We were like, wow, what a weird dude. And I mean, we'd like mess with him. We started to mess with him. We got the deal done, and I'd be like, hey, dude, you want a beer? And he'd go, no, I don't think so. That wouldn't be proper. We'd bring him into the office, and we'd have football games on. And we'd catch him like zoning out on the TV, like enamored with it, because he was never exposed. But anyway, I could go off on these trails, but we got great enjoyment out of human behavioral characteristics always. And as we continue to grow and forge these relationships, we were like trying to figure out how we could keep pouring the money back into the company to fuel growth and what the best way to do that would be. And Marty had come to us and he's like, hey man, I need more money. I need like 100 a day. I can't do 50 a day. I've got kids to raise. I got a car payment. My wife bought a car. I've got a mortgage. I live behind Trav. I bought a new house because he drives me nuts. And Dana and I started to have the conversation like with Marty in a very like non-pressured way. Like, what would it take for you to walk? I'd say that to Dane. Like, dude, how much money would it take for you to bounce? And he go, I don't know, man. I'd probably roll for like 500,000. I go, dude, that's a ton. I go, I'd probably walk for like 4. And then I'd look at Marty and I go, what would you walk for, dude? And he go, well, I don't know, man. I kind of like how much money we're making. And I'm not sure how much I walk for, but it'd probably be like $1 million. I go, dude, you're crazy. $1 million? Well, we knew that where we were going and giving Marty more money and us taking more money, it wasn't going to serve the company or the organization with some of these crazy, lofty, wild-ass goals that we had. So I'll leave you there, and I'll bring it back again next week. I love you all. Have a kick-ass week.